Welcome to The Catbird Speaks, the podcast for The Catbird Seat, the White Sox blog on the ESPN Sweet Spot Network. You can find this podcast, as a reminder, on iTunes by searching, you know, The Catbird Seats. You know, you search things on iTunes by the name, and it brings it up. It's an old system at this point. Joining me today is Matt Adams, our senior copy editor in Arizona.
I will accept this title and this location.
I don't really know the towns in Arizona beyond Phoenix. And I don't think
everyone,
you live there.
Everyone just refers to Phoenix area as Phoenix. It's like when you're not from Chicago, and even if you're in the suburbs, people ask where you live, you're supposed to just say Chicago because they don't know what the hell Schaumburg is.
Or Glenview.
Exactly.
I always make sure to say that I'm from the suburbs so I don't sound like an asshole who thinks he's from the city who's not.
I try to evaluate if the person, you know, I'm speaking to gives a shit or not and act accordingly.
Sure. Did you ever identify Mundelein as Chicago to somebody?
If I know for sure they have absolutely no clue about anything, Illinois. Because if you just say Illinois, it's a town in Illinois, and then people start thinking you're, like, from the St. Louis area or, you know, somewhere in the expanse of that giant state that's not the Chicago area.
Right. Joining us from not Glenview is Ethan Spaulding.
I am in Madison, back to school.
The hopping college town, just waist-deep in illicit drugs and all that.
I'm sure there are plenty of people tonight, considering it's Thursday, but I have a 9:55 class tomorrow, so.
This is a good choice, being on here for you.
Yeah.
We are here to waste some time about White Sox baseball, which is a coincidence, because that kind of seems like what they're up to at this point of the year. They're in their regularly scheduled September malaise, where they just kind of play off the string against other sad teams. And we think about next year. That's pretty much what I've been getting from the recent games. Is anyone else more excited?
You can, if you want, you know, keep an eye on the elimination number as it makes its way down to zero. It's in the double digits still in September. So, I mean, I guess that's worth not much.
I like to watch Jose Abreu bat. And Adam Eaton bat, usually. And I don't know. The pitching, but aside from Sale and Rodon, Quintana's just Quintana. He's always the same.
Really just waiting for a 400-inning game so that Trace Thompson can get enough bats to qualify for the batting title.
That's our prayer. It's annoying that the wild card, or at least the second wild card race, has stayed so depressed that if the White Sox had, like, come out of, like, the end of August or the end of July with any momentum at all, they'd be in it.
If they had gotten Yoenis Cespedes, they very possibly could be in it. He's been, I mean, obviously adding up the WAR is not a good practice at all, but he's been worth 2.7 WAR. You put that on the White Sox, take out LaRoche, take out some Avi, and he's in right every day. And you've got three and a half less losses. You're right at 500. And considering how garbage the AL is, you're a contender, kind of.
Yeah, 500 would have you less than four games back. The White Sox are only 6.5 back.
If you pick any of the losing streaks and just sprinkle a win or two in there, they're sitting right there.
I think if you replace Jeff Samardzija's August with, like, I don't know, maybe even Eric Johnson's, you'd be, like, within five.
And you replace Avi with Yoenis Cespedes, and you're maybe right there. And we're talking about Yoenis Cespedes as a legit AL MVP candidate, too.
If you replace Avi with, like, stupid short sample Trace magic, are you, like, a couple games closer?
Garcia's actually not been terrible in the time where Trace has had his magic. He's, like, been pretty decent, I want to say, in August and September so far. He hit good. Like, and he's been striking out a little less. He's been okay. I mean, I'm not. Yeah, he was an above league average hitter in August. He's been really good so far in very short sample in September.
We can get into this because this is kind of like something on our agenda, but kind of like developing youngsters. Avi, he had a pretty good statistic, stats for August. He hit like his most home runs in any month that season. He hit four. He hit like three in the first 10 days and then went like almost 3 weeks without hitting another one. And that was like far and away his best power month.
This year, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, for what it's worth, his K rate has precipitously dropped the last 2 months. He was down to under 20% in August, and this month, in small sample size, he's down below 16% with the highest walk rate so far. But I'm not going to get on that confidence. I can't bring myself to be confident in Avi again. Oh, and he's only had... he's had 33 plate appearances this month.
I just thought it was noteworthy the way that, like, Robin was kind of, like, openly talking about him. Like, he's not lifting the ball nearly enough, and he's not going to pan out, basically. He said, like, he's not going to make a very good living that way about Avi hitting the ball on the ground, which I thought was, like, critical as, like, any White Sox official has been of Garcia.
And as critical as Robin's been about anyone. He's had...
That's one of those, like, little Robin jokes, though, isn't it? Not going to make a living that way. But Robin doesn't actually chuckle. He just deadpans everything.
Avi had two extra base hits in all of July.
That's Avi stinks. But it's more Robin's version of what's going on. Because it'd be nice if he did actually think that and had some sort of plan to possibly move on from him if necessary.
I'm trying to think of, like, ways Robin kind of shows his hand every now and then. The Avi DH thing, I think, is definitely an acknowledgement to, like, this guy's far and away our worst outfielder. Which I guess should be obvious to everyone, but the White Sox have kind of plugged along with, like, 100% confidence with Avi so much that anything like that is kind of refreshing to me.
Also kind of
refreshing for Melky, too.
And he's also, like, LaRoche isn't playing anymore at all. Like, not against righties, not against lefties. He hasn't played since the weekend.
He's technically out with an injury.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. They said he had, like, right patella tendonitis or something like that. Which, he's 35. He might have that every day when he wakes up, as far as I know.
That's $13 million for him next year. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I don't know there's not a lot of hope. I mean, he's really old, and his contact rate just, like, fell through the floor this year, in addition to power.
Maybe he'll retire.
Are we expecting both to rebound? Because I'm betting at least one of those things is really going into the tank for forever. No?
I mean, didn't Avery Huff 1 year, like, look like this, and then the next year he put up, like, a 7-WAR season with the Giants?
Was he that old when he did it?
Well, he spent so many years on the coast. By the time he made it west, he had to have been pretty old.
He was 38. He's 38 now, and that was 5 years ago. So he was 33, so he was younger. But he was really bad in, I don't know. Betting on someone to have an even year Giants year on the White Sox doesn't seem like a good bet.
We could trade LaRoche to the Giants, and then I'd bet on it, but...
Also, Avery Huff is just not a reasonable comparison for LaRoche at all, but I guess, I don't know, maybe there's some hope.
So I didn't watch enough Adam LaRoche prior to his Chicago arrival to really know what he's like when he's not in the batter's box. I mean, I've seen him swing and play a little bit, obviously, but I noticed ever since spring training, and I see him do it a lot, every time he finishes an at-bat, his walk to the dugout is that of a man that's, like, trying not to move his lower back at all. I know that was something they talked about coming in, but if that's, like, that much worse and he's just not acknowledging that his back is absolutely ruining him.
Well, that would be an explanation for him being total garbage. Like, the back's kind of important.
Right. But people also don't generally come back from... return from back injury.
Not at this age, definitely.
Yeah, there's...
Matt, are you driving a motorcycle?
No, that was the sound of Adam LaRoche getting the hell out of town.
That was actually outside here in Elkhart, where people like to ride on motorcycles with Confederate flags mounted to them.
Hot rod in an Elkhart.
So my first item on the agenda here actually wasn't about players, but Robin Ventura himself. Rick Hahn kind of gave him what sounds, I guess, to outsiders as typical non-supportive GM speak. Like, usually when someone who's above you is asked about your job status and says, we're evaluating everything at the end of the year, that's really bad. But for me, that really set up any alarms because, I don't know, I don't really see Robin getting fired without, like, doing something egregious or the momentum, like, the attitude toward him getting, like, really negative somehow. Maybe it's just because, like, Ozzie Guillen had to, like, damn near threaten to, like, burn the building down before they even, like, released him from his contract.
I feel pretty much it's the same place it was when we were talking about it. When there was all the talk about will Robin get fired in the middle of the season before they had their little surge. If they have somebody else in mind that comes up and is available, he might, but otherwise they're not going to fire him just to fire him. It's just not going to happen.
I mean, if we think Rick Hahn is a smart guy who sees all these things that we believe that he does, he should technically, like, probably despise Robin's management to some degree.
He probably accepts that there's not a lot of managers out there that are going to not adhere to that thought process to a large extent. So he's probably got somebody in mind. Like, he's probably got, you know, just like a free agent thing. Like, the Sox aren't going to hold an open tryout for DH if they're not going to use Adam LaRoche. They're going to have somebody in mind to go sign. And so it only makes sense they would do the same thing for a manager. If that person isn't available, why bother interviewing anybody? Why bother clearing out the space when the players like Ventura just fine? You can status quo it at the cost of, you know, nothing.
So what are the chances, like, the guy they have in mind is just Jerry Reinsdorf thinking, like, oh, Jim Thome's a really nice guy. It'd be great if he's the manager.
That's a scary thought, and I hope it's not the case.
Why? It's because you don't want to see yourself hating Jim Thome?
That's exactly why.
I mean, I kind of feared him during the 2010 Twins season, but it didn't go over to, like, loathing or indignation.
You'll fear him for the same reason, which is contributing to White Sox losses.
So, yeah, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills a bit, but I just don't see a huge wave of disapproval for Ventura. I mean, it's not even like... I guess I'm not following the Nationals that closely, but I feel like there's not even, like, the level of negativity around him that comes like a Matt Williams.
The Washington press has totally turned on Williams in a way that presses will often turn on a coach before they're gone, but that hasn't even close to happened here.
Right.
Ventura hasn't, not since his rookie campaign, managed any high playoff leverage games, I guess you could call it, like, games that really matter all that much and, you know, stand in as late inning matchups in a game situation sort of thing.
Which I think saves them a lot because him tooling around and, like, handing huge, like, at-bats to Leyson Septimo was, like, something that was written off, like, oh, he's a rookie manager because it happened in his first season and he hasn't, like, gotten, like, any really high-profile, like, opportunities to show, like, I haven't learned anything, like, for 3 years. Like, what is the game recently where he... It was against the Twins where he toggled between three different relievers and three plate appearances to end up with Daniel Webb pitching. with like two outs.
He threw Jennings against Maurer, even though Jennings has a reverse split. And then he brings in Webb as a right-handed specialist. Was it against Sano?
Plouffe.
Oh, it was Plouffe. But like, why would you ever use Daniel Webb in a pivotal part of the game? It's Daniel Webb. It's really bad. He's done nothing to prove he's anything but really bad.
Like, I have a rational confidence for Jennings, but I'm pretty sure the advantage he gave you over Maurer was not worth Daniel Webb coming in right after him. To face Trevor Plouffe, who's, like, surprisingly become a solid player. I mostly remember him being in left field and for the 11 Twins who were and just dropping balls left and right.
Yeah, why can't the Sox develop a random guy like Dozier or Plouffe into an actual good player? Why can't they have their garbage turn into gold?
Or just, like, a guy stabilize and become playable. Like, Plouffe was nothing, like, super special, but he's held down third base to a, like...
If the Sox had league-average players at second base, third base, and right field, they're no doubt... They're in a playoff spot right now.
Also, if you slap Trevor Plouffe on the White Sox right now, he's the second best hitter in that infield behind Abreu.
Well, that's not exactly hard.
I saw something that might be up Ethan's alley this past week. Keith Law had like his standings for award winners, and he kind of is taking a hard line here, or at least an extreme position, and then being kind of really standoffish about it, which is a bit of his style. But he called Chris Sale his front runner for the AL Cy Young, and he's basically using like the FWAR above all standard for it, just saying that like Chris Sale has nutty strikeout numbers and doesn't walk anybody, and his pitching is better, even if the results don't back that up. Are we willing to support such attack just for the case of arguing Chris Sale for Cy Young?
That's not the guy I'm voting for my Cy Young. Like, I get it. He's been awesome. You could probably... I think he's the best pitcher in the AL. I don't think he's pitched like the best pitcher in the AL. If he got 300 strikeouts, I could see an argument for it. But that looks less and less likely to happen, especially as they're putting Johnson in the rotation. And, like, it's not like he's going against a weak field where a guy with a 3.3 ERA could win. He's going, like, he's facing guys who have a full run of ERA with more innings than him. And Keuchel and Price is up there. I mean, and Archer has the gaudy strikeout numbers. I don't think he's top three right now. Maybe third. Maybe you can put him over Archer. But I'm not putting him over Keuchel or Price right now. Or Gray.
I feel like Sale has proven this year, as much as any, that he's as talented, if not more so, than anyone going at this moment. But I feel like he hasn't had like his best year for him. Like, I feel like I've seen him more nights where he doesn't look himself, where he looks off, where his fastball is like missing by nearly a foot in a highly uncharacteristic way. And he's blended that with like these like otherworldly starts where he's just, you know, decapitated great lineups. But
wait, wasn't the game before he struck out 15 against the Cubs, wasn't he coming off two straight 7-earned run starts?
Possibly.
Or was there one in between that? Like, that's basically emblematic of his season. Like, he's just... He's looked terrible at times, not just bad, like just getting hit all over the yard. And a lot of those starts are starts where it's like they're Phil Hughesian starts almost in how the line looks, because they'll have a pretty FIP. They'll be like 8 strikeouts and 1 walk. But if you're watching it, he's just letting line drive after line drive on misplaced fastballs down the middle.
They're Edward Jackson starts.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Or Javi Vasquez with less walks.
Have you ever looked at the ESPN site's Cy Young predictor?
I did not know it existed.
No.
It's something that exists, and I don't know exactly what goes into this formula that creates, like, a point system where you can sort who it thinks will be the Cy Young. And the number one on the list is Dallas Keuchel, by a large margin. He has 179.9 Cy points, and the next closest person is Sonny Gray with 137. So Chris Sale's not even on the top 10 of this, but David Robertson is.
What?
David Robertson is number six on this list.
David Robertson's blown like as many saves as any closer in baseball this year.
He has. I haven't looked it up, but I opine that it might be because he gets a large proportion of the leads he's handed are probably one-run leads, given this offense.
Solid point.
But his stats are, like, in aggregate are fine, but, yeah, he's had some situational blowups.
He has less blown saves than only Fernando Rodney and Jim Johnson.
Both of whom lost their jobs.
Yeah, both of whom have switched teams. And I think both of whom were designated for assignment. That said, his numbers are way better. He's got a 2.44 ERA to each of their ERAs well over four. But, like, the names of the guys up there with him in the blown saves are not elite closers. It's Jim Johnson, Fernando Rodney, A.J. Ramos, Junichi Chizawa, and then Yuris Familia, who's that dude's nasty, but, yeah.
That guy's going to, like, eclipse definitely 80 innings this year.
He's at 68 right now. I think, yeah, Bentancur is leading the league in with 71. But, Jesus, Bentancur in 71 innings pitch has 112 strikeouts.
He's good.
Which is not all that different from Sale on a per inning basis, which is insane.
A team like that, some guy like that probably lets, like, David Robertson walk in free agency.
And then claims him and would probably have... I wonder if David Robertson's a... I think you've mentioned this before. I wonder if he's a guy you can look into trading if you're confident in Nate Jones.
Nate has been less sharp the past couple
weeks. He's let up some dingers.
Yeah. He's reminded me what I felt about old Nate Jones, which is... He goes out there some guy times and you ask, how does anyone ever get a hit off this guy? And then he goes out there and like, oh, I remember why he kind of languished in the minors until he was 26.
Yeah, sounds about right.
If you trade someone like David Robertson, I mean, A, you're wanting to drop some of the risk of that contract, but B, what sort of player would you even get in return for that?
Salary relief and probably a... mid-level, I mean, maybe you can get a position. I don't even know, actually. I don't know what... The Phillies got nothing for Papelbon. And Papelbon had less money owed and is probably better. Papelbon's really good.
He has another one more year left after this?
Yeah.
Law not only has Sale as the number one Cy Young, he has him fourth in MVP voting.
So he is literally just copying the Fangraphs WAR leaderboards. Because
that seems to be the inspiration.
Because Sale is third in Fangraphs WAR. Yeah, he's third in the AL behind Donaldson and Trout and ahead of Machado.
Law writes... His Sale, in reference to Sale, his ERA is a full run higher, in reference to how he was last year, because, well, that's baseball. I think there's more behind it than that.
Yeah, the thing with pitcher WAR is, like, it's using the peripheral items to, like, that are used to be a better predictor of things, as opposed to, like, view what happened on the field. But, like, when you're voting for Cy Young, like, that this year happened. Like, that's how it happened. Like, just...
Right.
That and has I mean, to come into more of effect than I know there's some of that's baseball stuff, but not that much as he wants you to believe anyway.
Like, if we're going to use the super, like, regress stats too, why don't we use the more valuable defensive run DRA that's on Baseball Prospectus? Like, we're kind of past the point where we're like, oh, FIP is a be-all, end-all. We have DRA on Basil Respectus. And that's that, based on what I've read, seems to be much more at showing value for past results. So, like, I don't know why you'd still be using FIP or at this point. And Sale in DRA is 12th in baseball. And Sonny Gray, Dallas Keuchel, David Price, Corey Kluber, Chris Archer are all ahead of him. That's deserved run allowed, by the way.
Right. Is there any concern about him?
Sale?
Yeah.
Well, since I'm on the Baseball Prospectus page, we can go to the pitcher abuse points.
Oh, yeah, and there's that.
He is leading the majors in pitcher abuse points.
Is he leading the majors for, like, the second or third year in a row?
Well, last year he didn't because he missed 6 weeks.
Right.
But, and then he was, like, fifth years before. The White Sox have four pitchers in the top 18. But that's, like, just what they do.
Right.
I don't think I'm all that concerned, to be honest. Like, I'm no more concerned about Sale. I guess I can't say that I am about Kershaw, because Kershaw is not human. But that I am about a guy... Like, I'm no more concerned about Sale getting hurt than I am about a guy like Corey Kluber getting hurt. Or Chris Archer getting hurt. Like, there's enough evidence at this point that he stays healthy that I'm not going to buy into mechanic stuff. Like, I think that if anyone knows mechanics, it's Cooper and Herm Schneider. And I think that if they're letting this happen, they're, like, I think it's okay.
Yeah,
like... I'm kind of going off of memory here, but I'm not envisioning those, like, bad Chris Sale starts coming directly after, you know, a game where it would be considered high risk as far as, you know, pitcher abuse points go. And I would think that generally speaking, players that have the years following a high year like that, their bad starts in that year would probably have followed when they were, well, abused.
And another thing with Sale, I think, and this is not, I'm no mechanical expert, but one of the things with the inverted W and all this stuff like that, which is mostly bunk science, but the real legit thing about it is that the inverted W is hard to maintain mechanically when you're tiring. But Sale looks better mechanically usually in the seventh and eighth than he does in the first and the second. Like, he seems to have problems in the first and second repeating his mechanics when he's throwing 99 miles an hour and he's flying all over the place. But he usually looks, when he's up there and pitches, he looks the same, if not better, mechanically at the end of games, which I think is a really good sign for maintaining health. Like, he's not, like, blowing up and doing different stuff or losing velocity at high pitch counts.
Yeah, it probably poisons Robin's thinking to some degree, but Sale is good at finishing strong.
Right. And I think that's a good sign.
And I guess we really don't think that Cooper and Schneider are sitting on the bench as guys are going to, like, the 110s, 120s, and screaming at Robin, saying, "No, you prick," and he's just ignoring them or anything like that. This is the organizational approach at this point.
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know. I mean, I think it's really worth noting. I've been saying I'm going to write an article about this for a while, but I keep tweeting it. The Sox, in the last 2 years, have lost, this year, literally one game to injury for a starter. And last year, 6 weeks. Otherwise, no starters have gone on the DL. Like, they're doing something insanely right. I don't know what it is, but it's, like, I'm sure if I actually crunch the numbers, like this run that they're on in the last really 3 years, after Dinks came back from surgery, and I guess since Dinks came back from surgery, this run that they've been on of keeping pitchers off the DL has to be really insane. Like, other than Sale, they haven't gone on the DL at all.
And having Dinks not go back is a minor miracle in itself.
That was right. What was supposed to happen.
That's what we were all banking on at the beginning of the year. Dex will pitch for a few weeks and then his arm will fall off.
Beginning of the year, it's banking on it like beginning of 2013.
Dinks really isn't, in terms of the value for what he's being paid, he really isn't that been that bad of a contract of like in this year. Like he's been steady.
Sometimes you're just paying for innings, and that's delivered.
And of all teams, the Sox are probably the last team that needs to pay for innings because they're so good at turning guys into fourth and fifth starters that were nothing in the minors. I think that Danks could be valuable for other teams.
Speaking of which, did anyone watch Eric Johnson on Sunday? Anyone?
I'm trying to remember if I actually watched that game, and I think my answer is no.
Well, then. So he made his debut. I think about 20 minutes into it, I realized that I have been spending the last 2 months getting excited about a number four starter.
Number four starter is fine.
I know, but just not like the prospect watch type of guy I usually want to spend like my waking hours thinking about. He set 92 the whole day, which I guess is like the big thing for him since his velocity was mysteriously down, and he still like does not concede that there was any injury issue all of last season somehow. He keeps saying basically like his mechanics were out of whack. That's a really long mechanical. That's a really long time to have your mechanics like that problematically terrible. But he looks passable. It looks like he's supposed to replace Jeff Samardzija down the road. I guess, is everyone okay with this?
I mean, it's worth a shot. I mean, until something else can be done. It's not somewhere that I'm worried enough about it that I'd say in the offseason a pitcher needs to be targeted to plug into that rotation.
I don't think he's going to be an above-average guy. But I think as far as...
But average is fine.
Yeah, average is fine.
As we have seen with the offense, if we could get average, like, if you have a team full of average players and then you throw Chris Sale and Jose Abreu on that team, in this day and age, like with this playoff climate, that's a playoff team. Because
yeah.
The guy who wants to be replacing who you thought Jeff Samardzija was going to be this year is Carlos Rodon.
Yes, and Carlos Rodon is, that's becoming really exciting, I think. Like, his sudden stretch of starts where he's, like, not walking a ton of guys and players are looking bad on his slider, like, that's, when he's thrown more innings this year than he ever has, that's something exciting, I think.
He was sitting really hot all of his last start, too. He was hitting above 96.
He hit 98 on his 112th pitch of the game. That's Chris Sale stuff.
Like, he's not just, like, taking miles off to throw strikes even anymore.
No, yeah. His fastball's finally locating, and that's huge.
So, that's your guy. That's your Samardzija replacement. Eric Johnson's kind of is more filler, and I think that's something he's more capable of being right off the bat.
I mean, so you got, like, Rodon is, you're looking at a starter that if the good that's shown sticks, that's a really good two. Quintana's a really good three. And I'm sure I would be fine with Dank. I'm fine with Danks as a 4-5 type, if Johnson could be a 4-5 type. Now then you're banking on not no one getting hurt, but no one gets hurt on the White Sox.
I guess, is there anyone... Carson Fulmer probably is ready to be, like, a reliever at best at some point late next year.
I don't even know if late, but I don't think I see Carson Fulmer starting with the White Sox next year. He's not Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon is a unicorn, really. Like, that's real stuff. That's a pitcher like that. I don't know. I'm obviously not using very descriptive terminology right now, but that is a guy who you like. He's just built like a pitcher and he throws hard and he's got a nasty slider. If that changeup ever comes along, that's a frontline guy.
Yeah, so if you want to make assumptions about a Rodon step forward, like you said, if Johnson's average and you have three guys in the staff that are above average, one who's way above average, I mean, by definition, half the league starters are below average, basically. So you're way ahead of the game right now with that.
And actually, half the league starters are below median, but obviously there's being a difference between average and median, but average over 200 innings is pretty damn and like valuable. If your back end guys are average over 200 innings, you have a really good pitching staff. And I mean, yeah, we were talking about how problematic F4 is, but White Sox pitching rotation, including Samardzija's garbage, pretty sure, last time I checked, their starting rotation is leading the majors in F4. It's second to the Dodgers now, but that's nothing to scoff at. And I mean, Sale has almost half of that with his F4, but that's I think they have the starters to easily be a playoff contender, and they have the starters to really go at you in the playoffs, even losing Samardzija, because Samardzija sucks.
Why does he suck so much?
His stuff doesn't look good anymore. Like, there's no reason to swing at his stuff. It's
poor
just kind of...
I told you.
Is it poor schooling?
Correct.
Yeah. Another diss on Valparaiso Hyde. Our fan base isn't going to like that, Matt. He's infuriating to watch. I don't like this man.
White Sox,
it even pisses him off to watch Michelle pitch.
White Sox starting pitching also, other than the Mets who have played one more game, most innings pitched in baseball, and four under the Mets, and the Mets have played one more game. So they're on average pitching the most innings per game in baseball. That's something.
It is.
Yet they're still...
They have so much going for them, and they're still really bad.
Okay, so starting rotations, games over 500 that are the top five in innings pitched. The Mets are 13 over 500. The Sox are 9 under. Astros 11 over. Cardinals 27 over. The Dodgers 20 over. Every team that's elite in these innings pitched are way over 500 with their starters. Only two others in the top 10 are under 500. And the Sox are 9 under 500, and they're second in baseball in innings pitched.
There's some wonky stuff with the timing of when they got beat, too, because there was that huge amount of time, and it's still going on for Samardzija and Quintana, for that matter, a lot, too, where they're getting beat a lot in the first inning or the second inning.
Yeah.
And, like, if that bad inning just happened to have come along in the fifth instead, these guys wouldn't be going into the sixth, seventh, and eighth innings. They would have just got yanked at that point. But the fact that it happened early... It's like, oh, we'll let them get their feet, and they have a little bit more leeway. So it's kind of weird in that regard as well.
Sox starters also second in baseball in Ks per nine. They have a pretty low walk rate. They have a really good pitching staff, despite the fact the guy that they traded to be their number two has been complete garbage. They're second in the majors in strikeouts as a starting staff. I really like their pitching. I just wish that they had other things.
Like a third baseman in the past.
And a second baseman and a designated hitter and a right fielder. And if you fix those things, you don't really need a catcher. But when everything else is bad, it hurts to have a catcher who can't hit either. It'd be nice if the left fielder, who can't really field, was above average offensively, even though he's looked that way. Yeah, that's every position except for first base and center, and I guess shortstop. Alexei's been better late. You guys saw that stat that I tweeted the other day about Jose Abreu, Adam Eaton, and Alexei Ramirez have combined for more than 100% of White Sox positional F4 since the start of last year.
I did see that. I retweeted on the account.
The Sox, like,
good stat.
That's insane. Three players, they've effectively, since the start of 2014, they've effectively been three players and a bunch of minor leaguers. It's insane.
I would see, like, their big areas that need to be addressed or need to be considered to be addressed. Third base, right field, DH, second base. And I think they probably get to two of them tops.
I think that I want Jonas Cespedes a lot.
That's and a lot of money.
And you know who's more money, but who I might want more, is Jason Hayward.
I'm on the Hayward train for sure.
That defense and rights, that's some nice stuff.
That means, because you've both said that you're hitting Justin Upton.
I'm totally fine with Justin Upton, too. Justin Upton hits 30 bombs in the cell.
Yeah, there's plenty of options there, for sure. They need to attack one of those.
And if you get one of those three guys, if you have one of those three guys for an entire year this year, you're a playoff contender. Or a playoff team. I still wish they had gotten made that. I still wish they had gone for Hayward, but I guess they didn't really have anything that competes with Shelby Miller. That's a pretty big, it's a pretty nice return for Hayward, especially with him rebounding. But
it's pretty nice that you can just trade Shelby Miller and then have your pitching staff throw like a 140 ERA plus or whatever stupid shit the Cardinals are doing this year.
Lost Adam Wainwright, and their starting pitching has the same ERA, I think, as Matt Harvey this year. it's like they have Matt Harvey going every game. No, I think it's their entire staff. They have Matt Harvey going every inning, every game. It's just bullshit. They just do everything right. I hate it. All right, I gotta go.
So long.
All right, Ethan.
Bye, guys.
Matt, my plan for us is to talk about crappy players now that Ethan's gone.
Didn't we already do that?
Well, I was just looking at the list of guys you're giving, like, cups of coffee to right now.
Like,
what have you seen of Mike Ault?
The White Sox journey to make Mike Ault a playable third baseman.
I don't think there's a more damning thing you could say about Tyler Saladino other than, we just got Mike Ault, and we're going to give him every opportunity to succeed.
Yeah, that was a really loud declaration, as we all kind of said. I don't think Trace is going to work out. I mean, we don't think Tyler's going to work out. And then they throw this at us.
I just think it's funny because if you watch the games, you see him batting at the top of the lineup, you see him struggling, but it seems like a guy that management has a lot of confidence in. And then Rick Hahn, like, I found this, like, still half full orange juice carton in the dumpster. I think we should all drink it.
I mean, that's got to say something about Robin's level of, like, I don't give a shit. If he's, like, not really wanting to play Tyler Saladino, but he's like, well, if I'm going to play him, I'm going to bat him second. But I really would prefer not to play him. I'd prefer to play that carton of orange juice.
Michael doesn't look like he is anything.
No, and he hasn't even had much to show defensively.
No, he botched those two plays. I mean, it was kind of wet that night, but yeah, he didn't look smooth out there. And he was supposed to be a guy, I think when the Rangers were first trying to call him up back when he was a prospect, they were like, well, we have an injury at first base, but we have Andrew Beltre. And people were saying, like, Mike Ault's a third baseman. You're not going to get – you're wasting him if you play him at first base just for his bat. He's a good third baseman. And so that's why I was thinking might be a solace now that we know, like, his bat is awful. But there's been no real indication of power so far. I mean, I'm talking about four games, but he struck out a ton like we know he's going to do. There's nothing that makes me feel warm and fuzzy about this dude. And the fact that the Sox are at the point where they're giving trials to Mike Ault in Major League games just is an irritating reality.
Maybe they have a master plan with their extreme health on fixing his eye issues that caused him to fall off as a prospect in the first place.
Just LASIK, I guess.
I don't know. Tyler Flowers is going to lend him his glasses or something.
Someone needs to lend Tyler Flowers new glasses. I feel like there must have been some situation like in The Natural where after like a swing, he came back to find his glasses broken.
Yeah, so Michael, let's ignore some of the articles that have come out with the White Sox singing his praises in their hope for him moving forward beyond 2015 and assume that something else is going to be done there. Like, that can't actually be the plan, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's as damning as it is with Tyler Saladino, it's like the next level of damning about Matt Davidson.
You're now our guy that we need because we have zero else.
It's like, Mike Ault, really? Is there no one you want to call up in Triple A? Nope, nope, can't think of anybody.
Oh, man. Well,
I mean, Trey Mikulski is a might be okay in a couple of years, but I think they, when I say, like, I think they're addressing two out of those four areas, I think third base is absolutely one of them, because if you're starting Mike Ault, you're starting Mike Ault.
Well, if there's any team that's comfortable shrugging their shoulders at third base for seasons on end, it's definitely the White Sox.
I mean, right field is so much better to fix this offseason.
Right.
But third base, there isn't even like an illusion of a guy.
You would, you know, if you're going to be able to go, I mean, if you go ahead and assume there's going to be something done with right field, awesome, great. Third base is the next really big gaping hole. If you're going to throw Mike Ault out there, you just as well play like Gordon Beckham, because at least you know the glove exists.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
It doesn't even make sense to like have a guy that you're, I don't know, hoping you're fixing his offensive problems and getting some sort of defensive value out of him that you don't know exists. That doesn't compute.
You
I just opened
a lot
the
of, like,
door
old...
for bringing Gordon Beckham back, by the way, and I'm not really excited that I said that.
I think that dude's career is over.
I think it is as well. Every time I look at him, every time I see him on screen, I wonder if that's going through his mind. Like, these are my final days. This is it.
I mean, I guess it isn't, because he can field up the middle, and you can get reserve jobs hitting a 500 OPS doing that. But it really doesn't look good. I don't know who would commit any playing time to him. I feel like he'd be like have Angel Sanchez status with any roster he got picked up on. At this point, there are a lot of like veteran stopgaps, I guess, as far as third baseman. Like, you could. There's David Freese, who's bad, but, you know, who's there. Casey McGeehee is somehow only 32 years old.
He has this weird thing where he, like, I don't think he could handle it on the White Sox, because he craters constantly, and then it's like, oh, wait, I'm not dead yet. And Chicago would just murder him.
I don't want him, but Daniel Murphy is someone you could throw there. He's going free agent. Ben Zobrist would obviously be pricey, but he's 35. He's a free agent.
Hey, you know, that'll be an interesting...
Juan Uribe is what everyone wants.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I love Juan Uribe. Love watching him on whatever team he's on, but I just don't know. If it's going to be a one-year stopgap, I say screw it. It's definitely better than Mike Ault, and he's not going to command a boatload of money.
You could probably throw Kelly Johnson at the problem and get maybe above replacement.
What kind of pricey do you think Zobrist actually is? He's a really weird case.
I guess the question is how many years. Can you get him for 2 years, or do you have to give him three?
I don't know. That's. I have no idea how the market will treat him. I mean, he's just strange. He's got no set position. The reputation is he can play everywhere. I don't know how strong that reputation is.
That'd be great for the Sox, because there's always at least two bad middle infield positions.
Can you play everywhere at once is the question.
Yeah, and he's been great this season.
But if it isn't, like, you know, something ridiculous, I definitely wouldn't be against that. And then... You know, when Mike Ault's skills come around, you can slide him over in a second or something.
So, I mean, as far as, like, the DH situation, they got so much money committed to LaRoche. If they just signed a great right fielder like Cespedes Upton or Hayward, and they put Avisail in some sort of rotating DH situation... he'd probably be pretty bad, but I wouldn't hate them for having made that compromise.
Yeah, I feel like the odds are good for the right field thing, and that definitely changes everything to get some production somewhere. But also, like, just because those three are available, you remember, like, I don't know, it's probably a long time ago now, like 10 years ago, probably even longer than that, there was a whole bunch of... It's like Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill and Tim Thomas were all available. The Bulls were definitely going to get one of them.
Tim Duncan, I think, was a free agent, too.
And then they pulled in Ron Mercer. We're going to get Ron Mercer to play right field. That's what's going to happen here.
I think we also like did really crappy free agent pitches and told everyone how cornrows are banned in the early 2000s, which was not a great move.
Well, you know, it's point being, I can just see being very disappointed, even though the crap is out there.
But didn't last year make you a believer in White Sox free agent finances? I mean, besides the fact that all the signings went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how to speak to this.
I mean, they showed that they are capable of being aggressive in free agency.
And what happened is now they might have some cost on their hands. What's weird about that being aggressive thing is, like, since LaRoche was first, and that was when we were all like, I guess so. But then with the other stuff, you started kind of saying, well, maybe this is good. And now they're on the hook for it.
I think my last line of the LaRoche article when they did it was, I don't hate this, or I'm not mad at this.
Yeah, I think that sounds right, and I shared in your view on it.
I guess I should have been mad at it, because it was bad, but...
It was a thing that people were like laughing at, because like, old LaRoche, what are you paying him all this money for? And it was kind of like, whatever, we don't have anybody, so this works. Lefty pop.
I think the move was more confusing because at that point we didn't know what direction the White Sox were going in. And it was kind of like we didn't know what direction they're going in. It was kind of like a weird first step. It was like buying like a grill accessory before they bought like the grill or like a charcoal or anything. It was like, what are you building here?
Did you actually use this analogy on the site? I feel like you did.
I hope not. Because I felt like it just came to me now and kind of slowly. But I guess I wonder if they're going to be just as aggressive again after it blew up in their face so badly. Speaking of which, Emilio Bonifacio is a free agent.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it.
He'd be a good utility man, right?
They have to be aggressive because Rick Hahn has specifically stated or restated the 3-year window. We're still in the window. This is still our time. We're still going for it. So they can't just say, maybe everyone's fixed and go in with the same shit next year. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah, like Sale, Eaton, and Abreu, they're entering like their late 20s.
Yeah, it's critical time to squeeze it out of them.
I think all those dudes are going to be 27 or older next year. Like, the time is very much now for them.
Abreu might even turn 30 next year, right? Or is he 29?
No! Damn you. Abreu is my age. So, I'm sorry if I took that a little personally.
Yeah, well, now you know how I feel when you're constantly shitting on Alexi Ramirez's age.
Well, the time is now for him, too.
Okay. Yeah, well, the time is something.
You got anything else you want to talk about?
Nothing constructive.
Well, what about something not constructive?
I could stand to talk about the Jeff Samardzija futures a slight bit more if you really wanted to. It's not constructive.
What do you see his future as?
What's that?
What do you see his future as? How much money do you think he's getting in free agency? What fan base is excited about paying Jeff Samardzija $75 million?
Well, he's going to make money somewhere.
But who wants to do that?
But it's like people are like, oh, he made a mistake when he turned down the Cubs offer, and it'll be a mistake if he doesn't take a qualifying offer to build up. Like, he's going to be a multimillionaire no matter what he does. He's not going to make any mistakes where he's going to be like, I really messed this up, you guys. Sorry, I can't make my rent this month. Like, it's not going to happen. So, that said...
Well, wait. If he, coming off a crappy season, turns down the qualifying offer, doesn't that, like, depress the living hell out of his value?
Yeah, but it's not like he's... broke. I mean, he's still going to make... He's going to get a large contract somewhere.
I feel like there are better players who have turned down the qualifying offer in the last 2 or 3 years and seen their offseason kind of hit the fan.
Sure, but the precedent is on the other side. Like, name a player that accepted the qualifying offer.
I don't know if anyone has.
They haven't, exactly. So it seems unlikely in that regard alone. But like you're saying, just because he would benefit more from a make good year than probably anybody else, he could accept it. But also, like a guy like Nelson Cruz turned it down, had a make good year contract at like half of the price that he would have got for the qualifying offer, but in the place of his choosing, and made good of it. So maybe he wants to pitch somewhere else and not here. Maybe Chicago pisses him off now.
I certainly don't think he wants to pitch here. I mean, the tone of discussion is very much like decided that he's gone. And like, it doesn't seem like he took to Don Cooper's stand tall adjustments very well at all. I mean, look at the results, and his mechanics look a mess. It seems like he's fighting against it. Nothing seems really great about this relationship.
The Sox are willing to offer him $15 million and take a compensation pick if he leaves, but we'll probably just say, okay, fine, if he accepts it, because at that point, they have no choice. But if he was to go somewhere else, he would have one of the 29 other teams would probably be perfectly willing to give him a one-year deal for $15 million or something near there. So he's got the freedom to be able to get that make-good year at about the same cost.
Who wants to do that, though? I don't want to do that. Like, if he was just some other organization?
I mean, a number of years ago, I guess it's like, 3 years ago now, where the market is slightly deflated from where it is now because it's rising quickly, the Sox threw Gavin Floyd $9 million for a single-year deal just to get him, out there pitching for them. So
that was his option, though, wasn't it?
Was it?
I thought it was they just picked up his club option. And people didn't want him to do that because they hate Gavin Floyd.
What's funny is I'm about to dial back into Gavin Floyd's Europe page, which I was just on twice in one day for old Gavin.
He says he's healthy now that he has all the screws in his elbow. Things are great.
He pitched yesterday or the day before. It doesn't say on there, but he had 9.5. million in 2013.
I feel like they just picked up his club option. And then he tore his Tommy John. He tore his UCL.
In any regard, they had the option of not having him. It was probably a $1 million or $500,000 buyout or something like that. Of not pitching for that year, and instead they allowed him to pitch that year for the 9.5. So the result is the same. He got a $9 million contract for a single season. So 3 years later, Jeff Samardzija getting 15 from somebody to pitch a single year is not, especially on a make-good year, where they might be under the impression that he'll have a better year in the attempts of earning himself value for a large contract. That makes sense. Somebody will do it. There's 29 teams that are not the White Sox.
I mean, he's not a Boris guy, but I feel like he might be just waiting for someone to step on a rake in early spring and then think, oh, crap, we need someone who has a chance of being good in our rotation. Is that an injury that still takes out baseball players on the regular, stepping on rakes?
If it hasn't happened recently, it'll happen soon.
I feel like it happened to Michael Saunders this year.
Did he ever come back?
No. Not for any significant period of time.
Oh, that's... We were all aghast that the White Sox weren't able to offer up anything to get him.
Stepped on a sprinkler while shagging fly balls in February.
Oh, that's Mickey Mantle style.
Yeah. People were talking about the same old cursed Blue Jays again because that happened. Tore cartilage in his knee for stepping on a sprinkler head.
Isn't that kind of what happened? I mean, Stroman tore cartilage in his knee, right, as a pitcher, fielding his position or something?
I thought he tore his ACL.
Well,
yeah, something like that.
I'm in the region.
He was fielding a bunt. That was the best thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of quick overreactions about that's why.
That's why you never bunt.
Pitcher shouldn't hit, see? And it was, defensive situation.
Saunders' story is so weird. He felt a pop on his while stepping on a sprinkler head while going for a ball at the team's training facility. Quote, I just tried to walk out the field and not draw any attention to myself. I sustained a serious knee injury and then tried to escape.
It's like getting hurt in gym class and not wanting to get yelled at by the gym teacher or something.
And then at the end of this quote, he's on crutches.
Wait, is that the, like the last three words of the article? He's on crutches?
No, it just says, there's this full quote about him, like, I didn't want to draw attention to myself, and then when I got into the training room, my knee felt like it was getting tight on the inside, Saunders said. I never had any issues with my knees, so that's when I knew something was wrong. And then the next line is, Saunders was on crutches Thursday.
Oh, Saunders. He's had such great luck at USA Other Field, he would have been, surely he would have survived.
He would have been dead in a week. That was when I felt like the Mariners' inability to beat the White Sox might have been, like, conjured, not artificially.
There was definitely some moments.
All right, who's on the take here?
Well, Michael Saunders.
Literally. Do you have, like, a player who you liked less than Jeff Samardzija this year recently?
I would have to say no, but if Micah Johnson had remained on the team, it could have ended up being him. But Samardzija was constantly out there and constantly sucking. Everyone else that started off really badly either fixed it or is Adam LaRoche. And I don't know, sometimes when you're old, you just kind of shake your head at guys like that.
If,
okay, you're old.
If 2011 Juan Pierre had, like, Jeff Samardzija's demeanor, is that someone you, like, bring stuff to the park to throw at?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He's, like, the perfect storm of expectations not met and just unearned swag and attitude that just is annoying to watch.
Yeah, I feel like I'd enjoy him being on another team. Like a really bad defensive team where he's just sneering at his infielders all the time.
I feel like he would look like he had less attitude if he just cut his hair. That alone would, like, be an attitude adjustment.
He's had that hair since college. I don't know what he would look like.
He looks like, you know, off of a video game when you do the creative player and you drag down the hair a little bit. Like, he's like, and they all have the same movements because their hair is like that, and that's what he does.
Like, that's how I picked him out in football games back 10 years ago in Notre Dame.
My guess is there's a whole lot of behaviors that he's carried over from his time at Notre Dame.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
Nothing about Notre Dame in particular. More about 21-year-olds in particular.
Who doesn't get better with Don Cooper? How does that happen?
Should be an indication of a man with his priorities out of whack.
Who, like, hooks up with, like, Don Cooper and their mechanics, like, go further into the tank?
Do you think at any point he told Don, like, shut the fuck up, you don't know shit?
Probably. I don't know.
I could see him saying something like that.
He looks like he's doing a Hideo Nomo impression these days.
What'll be fun is if Jeff Samardzija walks, what Don Cooper says next time he appears on, like, the score or something after that.
Oh.
Because he'll probably let fly about Jeff Samardzija.
There's nothing in a statistical profile that isn't, like, totally in the tank from last year.
Yeah, he's got every directional arrow pointing the wrong way. Someone dropped a magnet into his stats.
I feel like he probably has a lower strikeout rate than Matt Albers.
Please don't look it up. I don't want to have that confirmed.
That's what I'm doing right now. Do you want to end the podcast before I make it?
Just, can we cut to dial tone? Just.
What if he has a lower strikeout rate than John Danks?
Well, John Danks is a magician. He's untouchable.
I love how much the Royals loathe John Danks.
Yeah, it's kind of refreshing. I mean, I wish it was, you know, while we were on a better team or watching a better White Sox team play. But, you know, having somebody be the Bruce Chen, it provides a bit of justice. If it kept them from the playoffs like Bruce Chen did us and Jeremy Guthrie in 2012, then it would be more poetic, but
I
smirk.
So I have two names to give you here with the guys with higher strikeout rates than Jeff Samardzija. I got Matt Albers. I also have Dan Jennings.
Strikeout rates by canine or by percentage?
Percentage.
Oh, shit. I was really going to try to hide behind that.
Danks is 2 percentage points behind. Can't have it all.
Well, it's really something that we're going to finish 2015 where John Danks was a better pitcher than Jeff Samardzija.
The ERA is right there. He's going to make it. But Samardzija gave you more innings, though, so you got to take that.
Yeah. I take that as an offense.
Countless crappy innings.
That works against him. That's more time than we had to watch him.
Maybe we should have a podcast where we celebrate his departure at the end of the year.
I was going to say we should probably conclude this Jeff Samardzija lament hour.
We don't want to add any more to this fire when he resigns at the end of the year.
If he resigns, we're definitely dedicating a podcast episode to Jeff Samardzija things.
Screaming and cursing.
We could just recite all those tweets that you and Nick had the other day.
Yeah. We did it again last night a bit.
I missed that.
I said that Jeff Samardzija has a movie poster for the Scorpion King in his guest bathroom.
Well, I know what I got to go shop for if you ever come visit.
All right. Well, I don't like that guy. So that's our podcast.
All right. The end.